Have you ever wondered why some relationships flourish while others crumble despite seemingly perfect compatibility? Why that charming, attractive person who seems so interested suddenly disappeared? Or why you keep choosing partners who are wrong for you? Dr. Orion Taraban's groundbreaking book, The Value of Others, has become a cultural phenomenon for its unflinching examination of human relationships as economic transactions. Endorsed by prominent psychologists and relationship experts, this book has sparked heated debates across social media platforms and university campuses. Its controversial premise that relationships function as marketplaces where value is exchanged has resonated deeply with readers seeking to understand the often bewildering dynamics of modern dating and relationships. By applying principles from evolutionary psychology and behavioral economics to our most intimate connections, Taraban offers a framework that explains why we feel what we feel and do what we do in relationships, even when those behaviors seem irrational. At the heart of all human relationships lies a fundamental truth. They exist as media through which value is transacted. Though this economic perspective may initially seem cold or reductive, it actually illuminates why our emotional experiences in relationships often feel so mysterious and overwhelming. Our decisions about who to pursue, who to commit to, and who to leave aren't random or purely emotional. They're outputs of deeply unconscious calculations happening below our awareness. This covert calculator constantly evaluates countless factors simultaneously. How instrumental someone is to our goals, what they'll cost us in resources, how likely we are to succeed with them, and how they compare to other available options. These complex evaluations produce a value coefficient that determines how strongly we prefer one person over another. The fascinating part is that we never consciously experience these calculations. Instead, they transform into emotions that motivate action, feelings like attraction, love, indifference, or disgust. This explains why emotions seem to arise mysteriously from nowhere. They're actually the end results of sophisticated valuations our minds deliberately hide from consciousness to prevent decision paralysis. The mating and dating game ranks extremely high in our hierarchy of goals, often above individual survival, because it relates directly to genetic continuation. This explains why the sexual marketplace pervades our social world and why people sometimes do desperate things in pursuit of relationship goals. Our emotional responses to potential partners follow predictable patterns. Desire toward high-value individuals, disgust toward low-value ones, and either indifference or conflict toward those in the middle. We often ignore red flags in attractive partners because future liabilities are naturally undervalued compared to present benefits, creating a feedback loop where desire influences valuation itself. Since our valuation process operates largely unconsciously, we remain unaware of precisely what we value and to what degree. This explains why someone might consciously want a kind, stable partner, but repeatedly choose exploitative ones. Their actual values are revealed through choices, not stated preferences. The sexual marketplace isn't confined to dating apps or nightclubs. It exists everywhere in the social world. Any two adults can potentially initiate a sexual relationship regardless of differences in age, wealth, or status. This omnipresence makes people uncomfortable because it represents potential chaos lurking beneath civilized life. From workplace interactions to casual social gatherings, the undercurrent of sexual potential shapes human behavior in subtle but profound ways. We can't opt out of this marketplace. We can only signal we're closed for business, though most will transact after hours for the right price. These signals might include wedding rings, conservative dress, or maintaining professional distance. Since we can't avoid being in this marketplace, our best move is learning to navigate it effectively, understanding both its written and unwritten rules. In this marketplace metaphor, there are captains, traditionally men, and passengers, traditionally women. captains stand by their ships attracting passengers, while passengers seek captains to take them to their destinations. Both need each other, but have fundamentally different priorities. Captains seek adventure and conquest, while passengers typically prioritize security and direction. All people begin as passengers, and becoming a captain requires completing three distinct challenges: building a boat, creating a compelling lifestyle, learning to sail, navigating life storms, and charting a course, having direction and authority. Building a boat involves developing financial stability, social connections, and personal growth, the foundations that make one attractive to potential partners. Learning to sail means developing self-mastery, cultivating skills useful in rough waters, like logical problem-solving, emotional stability, and effective communication. In the sexual marketplace, captains must master two particular skills: seduction, the process of inciting and directing sexual interest, and frame management, maintaining the structure of a relationship's negotiated arrangement. This includes understanding body language, social dynamics, and psychological principles that govern attraction. The final challenge is plotting a course, identifying a mission in life that extends beyond relationships. This provides both resilience against life's inevitable pain and a compelling enticement for passengers. Without a mutually agreed-upon destination, captains and passengers can't do business. A captain's mission might involve career achievements, creative pursuits, or community leadership. Savvy passengers inspect ships thoroughly before boarding, examining both exterior and interior qualities. This inspection process happens largely before captains are even aware of passengers' presence. If they don't like what they see, they simply walk away. The inspection includes assessing financial stability, emotional maturity, social status, and future potential. This explains why captains lacking options despite marketplace advantages likely have problems with their inspection funnel, either with their lifestyle, visibility, or personal presentation. Success in the sexual marketplace requires understanding and addressing all aspects of this evaluation process. Everyone participating in the sexual marketplace has a specific value, their sexual marketplace value. While many people feel uncomfortable with this concept applying to themselves, they readily use it when evaluating potential partners. SMV functions as the primary metric for initial selection processes, with much filtering occurring before the first interaction even takes place. This filtering happens constantly in social settings, dating apps, and even professional environments, where people make split-second assessments of others' relative value. What Terabon calls normalized sexual marketplace value, NSMV, quantifies how closely someone matches their culture's attractiveness archetype for their gender. These archetypes are determined by both culturally specific factors that evolve over time and biologically constrained elements that remain consistent across cultures. For women, these biological markers include lower waist-to-hip ratios, facial symmetry, clear skin, and youthful features. For men, they include higher shoulder-to-waist ratios, height, muscular definition, and facial features indicating high testosterone levels. Cultural factors might include style of dress, social status indicators, and behavioral traits that signal success within that specific society. Since men and women are valued by different standards in the sexual marketplace, they reach peak NSMV at vastly different ages. Women, primarily valued for physical attributes like fertility and beauty, peak earlier, around age 23, as these qualities naturally decline with time. This biological reality is reflected in everything from advertising to entertainment, where younger women are consistently featured and celebrated. Men, valued mainly for material assets that provide lifestyle, security, and status, peak much later, around age 50, as these typically increase throughout life. This explains patterns like the consistent age gap in marriages worldwide, where men are typically 2 to 4 years older than their wives, with this gap increasing in second marriages. While normalized SMV explains broad patterns, attraction ultimately works on an individual level. As relationships become more significant, more standards beyond physical appearance come into play. This is where perceived sexual marketplace value, PSMV, becomes crucial. It's not what you objectively have, but what others perceive you have that drives attraction. Factors like confidence, social proof, personality, and communication skills can significantly impact PSMV, often overriding purely physical considerations. Men's PSMV is typically lower than their NSMV because their value markers, career success, resources, status, are less immediately visible in casual encounters. Women's PSMV is often higher than their NSMV through strategic use of makeup, fashion, and social presentation. This perception gap leads to various forms of lying in the dating marketplace, from makeup and filters on dating apps to false promises of commitment or exaggerated career success, as both sexes attempt to increase their perceived value without changing their actual value. This dynamic creates a complex game of signaling and counter-signaling where individuals must balance authentic self-presentation with strategic enhancement of their perceived value. The fundamental game of human relationships is how to get what you want from other people. In the game of please/no, one player, the wanter, can only say please, while the other, the giver, can only say yes or no, starting with no. The game ends when the wanter transforms the giver's no into a yes. This mirrors reality, where the default response to any request is typically no, because resources are scarce and specific desires often involve zero-sum competitions. The asymmetry between wanting, which costs nothing, and giving, which is costly, creates several dynamics. Wanters are disadvantaged by revealing their desire, deception becomes a common strategy, and players benefit by maneuvering the other person into the wanter position. When limited to saying only please, players quickly discover the inadequacy of semantic language alone. Communication happens through body language, facial expressions, tone, rhythm, and countless other nonverbal channels. Through emotional triangulation, wanters become increasingly sensitive to the emotional timbre of responses. A sharp no signals they're far off track, while a hesitant no suggests they're getting close. Highly skilled wanters possess mindful attention, emotional sensitivity, behavioral flexibility, and mastery of nonverbal communication, qualities that explain women's relative success in the sexual marketplace and relationships generally. In this game, every effective strategy in the wanter's playbook stimulates a specific emotion in the giver. This emotion becomes the basis for barter. A yes is transacted for an emotion. Strategies using positive emotions, friendliness, charm, playfulness, cultivate desirable experiences of comparable value to the requested good. Strategies using negative emotions, intimidation, pity, victimization, cultivate undesirable experiences of comparable but inverted value. Givers comply to escape the painful emotion, essentially bartering the good for emotional relief. In the sexual marketplace, men and women typically employ distinct strategies. Men commonly become ferry boat captains, not true captains who determine their vessel's destination, but service providers who take passengers wherever they want to go. Women, meanwhile, typically employ the stowaway strategy through relationship creep, gradually occupying more space on a man's ship without negotiating terms. In the game of please/no, a single factor determines the outcome: power. Power isn't wealth, status, or physical strength, it's psychological, defined as the ability to get others to act in service of your goals. These material advantages are merely power proxies that work only when they successfully excite specific emotional states in others. After observing countless interactions, Taraban identified 10 principles that signal power. The first is that powerful people move less, like an infant who lies motionless while the household scurries to meet its needs. In dating and professional contexts, powerful players initiate less, respond more slowly, and use fewer words. The second principle is that the more powerful person is less committed, making them more likely to walk away and less susceptible to manipulation. The third principle reveals that power comes from having more options. In the sexual marketplace, men increase optionality through visible competence, while women do so through visible attractiveness. The fourth principle shows that power derives from willingness to sacrifice. Those prepared to do whatever it takes often don't need to follow through, as their conviction itself becomes power. The fifth principle demonstrates that those willing to transgress boundaries gain flexibility and effectiveness unavailable to rule followers. The sixth principle is that the more powerful player is more tolerant of emotion. Most core strategies in the game are emotional manipulation techniques that only work if the target can't tolerate certain feelings. Emotional resilience makes you functionally immune to manipulation. The seventh principle reveals that power correlates with invisibility. Both society's most and least powerful members are unseen, with the truly powerful operating behind the scenes. The eighth principle shows that flexibility creates power. Successful players adapt like water, flowing around obstacles rather than rigidly adhering to failing strategies. The ninth principle establishes that knowledge of others creates power. Understanding not just people in general, but the specific individual you're dealing with gives you tremendous advantage. The tenth principle reveals that the more powerful player is the better communicator. Beyond semantic language, communication occurs through glances, gestures, posture, movement, silence, and tone. Attractiveness functions as a special form of power, particularly relevant to sexual relationships. More attractive players consistently get more of what they want and navigate all relationship phases with greater ease. They're targeted more quickly in the attraction phase, secure better terms in negotiation, and retain relationships more easily in maintenance. Taraban identified three fundamental laws of attraction that govern how power operates within sexual relationships. The first law is simple yet profound. People want what they want, not what wants them. This explains why pursuit often drives away the pursued, as the natural instinct when being pursued is to flee. Western romantic ideology misleads many into believing that demonstrating intense interest will secure relationships. But wanting someone more doesn't make them want you more. In fact, it often allows them to desire less. The second law states that it's impossible for two people to be equally attracted to each other in any relationship. This inequality creates the balance of attraction, with one person always liking the other more, the adorer, and one liking the other less, the adored, with the difference between them constituting the attraction gap. The adorer experiences emotions more intensely, both the joy of being with someone they love and the anxiety of potential rejection, while having relatively less power and control. The third law of attraction reveals the fundamental romantic misunderstanding. All forms of attraction are functionally indistinguishable. You cannot tell whether you're attracted to the person or to the circumstances surrounding them. This explains the dramatic swings in attraction, when getting back with an ex, from relief at breaking up, to desperate longing, to jubilation upon reunion, then back to frustration. These shifts occur not because the ex changed, but because the relationship dynamics and attraction catalysts changed. To measure attraction in relationships, observe how people deviate from their standard operating procedures. For women, attraction is measured by how much she gives. A highly attracted woman relinquishes cultural privileges of passivity and hypergamy. She actively pursues her interest and provides value rather than just receiving it. For men, attraction is measured by how much he gives up, particularly his sexual optionality. Both genders reliably signal attraction by doing things for the attractive other that they wouldn't ordinarily do for anyone else. The maintenance phase of relationships begins after attraction and negotiation, yet receives the least attention despite being the most important and longest-lasting phase. Like ships sailing from dock, relationships face significant challenges on the open seas, with no happily ever after guaranteed. The crisis of disillusionment typically occurs about 6 months into a relationship. Since attraction always precedes negotiation and maintenance, it serves as emotional fuel but is inherently distortive. The greater the attraction, the more significant the distortion. Most attraction isn't based on accurate knowledge of the other person, but on projected fantasies. Eventually, reality accumulates enough disconfirming evidence that these fantasies collapse. When this happens, partners appear completely different, attraction decreases dramatically, and many feel they've fallen out of love. The second major relationship crisis, the attempted mutiny, typically occurs 12 months to several years into a relationship, after the captain has invested considerable resources in the passenger. This investment shifts the power dynamic, setting the stage for a power struggle. Mutinies can target either the ultimate goals, mutiny of ends, or the methods, mutiny of means, but always operate by making non-compliance more costly than compliance. The third relationship crisis, the doldrums, emerges gradually over many years, unlike the jarring nature of previous crises. It manifests as a significant decrease in passion and sexual intimacy, transforming couples into functional roommates. The crisis stems from how sex serves multiple functions beyond pleasure, particularly emotional bonding through oxytocin release. Our cultural template for relationships prioritizes security and stability, settling down, at the expense of passion and sexuality. The same structures that create commitment actively undermine desire. Prevention is the best solution, selecting partners committed to growth and self-development who can tolerate the separateness and uncertainty that fuels desire. Counterintuitively, rekindling passion often requires behaviors that mimic affairs rather than following conventional relationship advice that prioritizes security over sexuality. These include spending time apart, maintaining mystery, reducing transparency, cultivating spontaneity, and preserving individuality. The most common criticism of the economic model of relationships is that not everything is transactable. Critics argue that reducing relationships to exchanges cheapens them and fails to explain behaviors like altruism, self-sacrifice, and unconditional care. Tara Bond agrees that certain goods, like friendship, loyalty, and love, are non-transactable goods, NTGs. They cannot be bartered or purchased at any price, making them invaluable. Consider a mother's love for her child. No amount of money could convince her to stop loving her offspring, demonstrating how some bonds transcend economic valuation. Love operates independently of how others treat us, making it both powerful and dangerous. This autonomy explains how religious teachings about loving enemies are possible. Love isn't contingent on reciprocity or worthiness. A parent continues loving their troubled child despite rejection, just as some maintain devotion to unfaithful partners. Love itself is remarkably simple, defined as what remains when all other named components are removed. It's distinct from desire, liking, or kindness. These can exist without love. For instance, one can desire someone physically without loving them, or be kind to strangers without loving them. Love is uniquely characterized as the bittersweet, ennobling feeling we experience when we sacrifice ourselves for the good of the other. Love presents a fundamental challenge because ego naturally asks, "What's in it for me?" Yet authentic love doesn't seek self-transcendence or spiritual growth as reward, as this would make it transactional. Like the sun that shines indiscriminately on both the righteous and unrighteous, love simply loves, because that's its nature. It wants only to remain in the presence of the loved one, but will forego even this if it serves the other's interests. Consider parents who encourage their children to pursue opportunities far from home despite wanting them close. This fundamental nature explains why love and relationships are often antithetical. Relationships are inherently transactional, while love is sacrificial. love marriages frequently fail due to this contradiction, causing bewildering vacillation between selfless devotion and self-interested demands. Partners oscillate between unconditional giving and expecting reciprocity, creating emotional whiplash. Moreover, love in its purest form is paradoxically unattractive. Self-abasement typically arouses disgust rather than desire. We admire sacrifice in theory, but often find it off-putting in practice. True lovers must ultimately be willing to sacrifice even their desire to be with the beloved if that serves the other's highest good, such as stepping aside when someone else would make their beloved happier. This represents love's ultimate test, the capacity to put the other's well-being above one's own desires and needs. The shocking truth emerges. People don't actually want relationships. They want value. Relationships are merely the media through which value is transacted. Where no value is exchanged, no relationship can exist. People rationally enter relationships as their best chance of securing desired value. But if they can obtain the same benefits more cheaply, easily, or safely through other means, they predictably will. People are entering relationships less frequently than ever before. The cheapening of sex has led to a widening divide between men and women in the sexual marketplace. Each side believes the other wants more for less, and both are right. Women anchor their valuation to historical precedents, viewing modern men as cads unwilling to offer anything of value for their sexual commodity. Men anchor their valuation to current market conditions, seeing women as greedy for refusing to acknowledge reality. While birth control transformed the sexual marketplace by reducing committed relationships, it initially facilitated casual sex by reducing risks. However, over the past decade, even casual sex has declined precipitously. Nearly one-third of American men under 30 report no sexual activity in the previous year, triple the rate from just a decade ago. The culprit behind this second tidal shift is Web 2.0, the development of person-to-person connectivity, user-generated content, and social media. For perhaps the first time in human history, men and women don't really need each other at an individual level. Both sexes are replacing actual relationships with simulated ones, transacting virtual resources for virtual sexual opportunities in ways that mirror their traditional marketplace roles. The contemporary sexual marketplace makes many uncomfortable with its superficial and materialistic nature, but these dynamics won't disappear. They'll likely intensify. All types of relationships will continue declining as they become costly solutions amid modern options. Rather than forcing everyone into a single structure or abandoning relationships entirely, we need alternative relationship models that better fit people's actual needs. Modern marriage fails because it's overburdened, expecting spouses to simultaneously be business partners, soulmates, lovers, roommates, parents, and more. No person can fulfill all these roles perfectly. Like the workplace transformation of recent decades, the sexual marketplace is undergoing a similar disruption that will likely evolve into something resembling a relationship gig economy, where people can get more of what they want rather than expecting everything from a single partner.